Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. If this is your first time tuning in, our show will help you to question your career reality. Now, this show is for you if you are considering a career in the entertainment industry. Our guests on the show are going to provide you with advice on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in the entertainment industry. And if you've been listening to us for the past 8 years, you know that our guests include Emmy Men. How about, I can't talk. Oh, I need to like, clip my tongue a little bit. Okay, I think that was a wild turkey cocktail before the show, but let's go on. Our guests include Emmy winners, Grammy winners, Tony winners, reality TV stars, producers, directors, actors, singers, comedians, casting directors, talent managers, screenwriters, novelists, and you get the idea. The list goes on and on and on and on. So basically, if they're working professionally in show business, we are going to have them on the show to give you entertainment career advice. And we make sure that our guests are at different stages of their careers. That means from professional to beginner. And that way, you are definitely going to have someone on the show who will be able to help you with your show business career questions. We don't want to just hear about the stars all the time and how they're loving life and driving their Porsches and Maseratis. We want to hear about the trials and tribulations of the beginning actor, just in case you're living in the Midwest or somewhere and you're thinking you're going to come to Hollywood and you're going to be walking the Oscar red carpet in a month. No, we want to hear what it takes. So that way it's very well balanced. Now, you can either listen or download to any of our past shows by going to our archive page, and that's on the LA Talk Radio website. So just go to latalkradio.com. There's a Channel 1 link, and there's a drop-down box. You click Question Reality, and this takes you directly to our archive page. And our shows are also available to listen to on iTunes under the podcast section and also on the very famous Stitcher.com. So just type in our show, Question Reality, in the search box. Now, if you want to find out about our future guests, as you know, we're always booked 6 months to a year in advance, but you can still be on the show because I think we're booking for, I think August or September, something like that. I'm not sure what my assistant said, but you can still be on the show. So if you want to find out more about that, go to our official website, which is different from latalkradio.com. Our official website where you can see all of our future guests is called questionrealityradioshow.com, questionrealityradioshow.com. And you can see all of the fantastic guests coming up. And you can also submit if you're working professionally in the entertainment industry or know someone that is. And again, you don't have to live in Los Angeles to be on the show. We have many, many, many guests that are international. So, and also live outside LA. So don't worry about that. Now, also encourage you to download our free app for Android and iPhone to be able to listen to all the other exciting informative shows on LA Talk Radio. So just go to our homepage and it's down the bottom. The app is down the bottom. It's located towards the right-hand side. So get that app so you can listen to me every single week. Oh, well, not just me, but you get the idea. Now, as always, we have a fantastic, gorgeous guest on the show today. Her name is Sandra Curry, and she is an actress. And I was so lucky. She's actually my very first guest booked by Don Lasky. And Don Lasky is a very trusted digital PR publicity marketing, brand, and social media advisor to creatives and creative enterprises throughout the United States. He's a fantastic guy. He has really great clients. So if you're looking for representation, you might want to check him out. His website is LaskeDigital.com. That's LaskeDigital.com. And Sandra Curry is our very first guest. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Sandra started acting as a teenager and got her SAG card. Everybody has SAG card stories. How'd you get your SAG card? Usually when you're a beginning actor, you say, oh, what show did you get your SAG card on? Everybody wants to know that. A lot of interesting stories. And this is an interesting story. Sandra got her SAG card on the film Rio Lobo, starring John Wayne and directed by Howard Hawks. Now, that's pretty big. That's a pretty big stuff there. She has been very, very fortunate working professionally as an actress in over 150 television shows, movies of the week, and films. And that's a very hard thing to do in show business. Let me tell you right now, everybody thinks they can just hop on the bus, hop on a train, or hop on somebody to come to LA and they're going to be a star and they're going to work continuously. It does not always work out like that. And Sandra is going to give us some tips at the end of the show for you guys. So hold on. Now, Sandra's mother, Marie Harmon, who played Conchita on Gunsmoke, big, again, huge, huge show. And her sister, Sherry, I apologize, Curry are also actresses, and her husband, Alan J. Levy, is a director whom she met in an audition. Now, come on, you know me. That sounds like a story we're going to get the scoop on a little bit later. I definitely want to find out about that. Very, very cool when you hear this. Sandra's brother-in-law is Robert Hayes from the favorite cult films Airplane and Starman. Can you believe it? This woman is like saturated in celebrity-dom. I'm going to just call it celebrity-dom. Now, Sandra's most recent film role was in the mega film. Now, you know I love me some Bradley Cooper. Woo! I'm going to hire somebody to just snip a piece of his hair and keep it as a little trophy. She was in his movies, the film trilogy Hangover. Very exciting. So we're going to hopefully hear some Bradley Cooper stories. And Sandra played, in the film, she played Linda Gardner, who was Zach's mom. Now, she recently also had recurring roles on Tyler Perry's Love Thy Neighbor as Miss Vivian. And she just completed the sci-fi pilot Supernova 45, which her husband Alan directed. So we're going to find out how that works, because usually I hear some stories about the husband and wife working together. So we're going to find out how they do it. She also has some very hot projects coming up. Framed, The Method, in which she'll be working with her good friend Eileen Gruba. I did not know this, but as most of our loyal listeners know, we've been very fortunate to have Eileen Gruba on this show a couple of times. We love her. She's a superb actress. And we also more so really admire her as a role. She has a huge role as a champion, in my opinion. And she really fights hard to shed light on the plethora of multi-talented disabled performers that are currently available for roles in the entertainment industry. So again, if you're a filmmaker out there, please look into that. There's so many talented people. It's so exciting to announce that we can finally see Eileen Gruba as the character Alice Ann on the upcoming NBC television drama Game of Silence. I think it starts next week. So excited. I've got already DVR'd it. But check your local listing. I'm not sure the exact date, but we announced it on the show last year, and the wait is over, so can't wait to see that new drama. So it's going to be a total hit. The trailers are really good. So check it out on imdb.com to see if one of your favorite actors is on the show. So finally, very exciting, Sandra Curry is developing a project with her sister Marie's book, The Narrow Road of Light. So there's so many exciting things we need to talk about. Let's just jump right into it and welcome Sandra Curry to Question Reality.
Well, thank you, Priscilla. I'm so thrilled to be on your show. How wonderful that you're doing this show and helping these people that would like to be in our industry gain some wisdom about it. That's so cool.
I tell you, I love it. I really do. It because we have such a diverse and eclectic group of guests. I get so many emails all the time saying, "Oh, I didn't know that you actually had a guest on that was a script supervisor. I came to Hollywood. I thought I wanted to be an actress, but then I started finding out about be a script supervisor, but I've never met one, and I listen to your show, and that's totally what I want to do." So I love that I can have people like you who are in the front light, in the limelight, and behind the scenes people, which I really kind of secretly love having on. I love having behind the scenes people on, but I can't find them all the time. It's really hard to find production assistants because they're so busy working like 17 hours a day.
A difficult time of it.
They do. Now,
if you love it, it doesn't matter, you know?
That's right. That's right. I mean, I what is that saying? I mean, if you get paid for doing something you love, I think it's your blessed. I don't know what the saying is. I have no retention for those cliches and sayings, but you know what I mean? You're very fortunate to be in an industry that you love. Now, we're going to start out, Sandra. Let's kind of go in chronological order because you have so I would imagine that you've had such an exciting life. Let's start out with your mom, Marie Harmon, who played Conchita on Gunsmoke. Woo! How exciting was that? Did she have any fun stories from working on the show? Do you remember any stories or, what was it like growing up in a household with your mom being an actress? I guess she was your inspiration, right?
Well, in a way, yes and no, because she had stopped working by the time I was really knowledgeable enough to pay attention at all, and she gave me every kind of acting and dance class you could possibly take. Truthfully, it really wasn't until much later when TV Land started that nostalgia TV, and they started having the old Roy Rogers shows on, and my mother was Roy Rogers' leading lady before he married Dale Evans.
Wow.
We were able to get, all of a sudden they said, you can buy these, at that time they were the VHSs. And so we got them, and Alan and I, we sat down with my family, and we looked at them and went, oh my gosh, she was fabulous. She was so natural and so funny, and I thought we just had no idea how terrific she was. She really was, and she started so young. So I didn't really have the input of having a famous mother because she was past that. My mother was in the dress business when I really started remembering. However, she did start remodeling at that time. So we would do those mother-daughter kinds of modeling.
Oh, the modeling and the pageants or any?
And also just even the live modeling. And she would make me walk with books on top of my head. I mean, she really, anything good about me now, she was responsible for.
Now,
she was not easy.
usually people on that professional level, they're very by the book, very type A personalities, but yet they can incorporate the fun side too. But they're professionals, and they're going to be hard on you. It's got to be hard. I can't imagine growing up with a celebrity mom, but you know what I'm saying. You got through it. But did you see as a small child? You obviously were aware that she was an actress, and were you curious, like, oh, I wonder what mom did before, or?
No, I mean, a terrible thing to say, I think I was more into myself.
Oh, okay. I can dig it.
I think I was a cheerleader, and I was more into myself, and she did encourage that, though. You know, she would want me to do at family picnics or family barbecues or whatever. She would always get me and my cousin, Judy, to sing. We would be singing songs and doing all that kind of stuff. So she really devoted a lot of time to us, and I don't know that I was infatuated with what she did. I was totally taken by her sense of being, though. She was a beautiful woman and really was able to put herself together impeccably. And so that's more what I knew of her. She was kind of a grand lady like that.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as the acting, though, I didn't really fully realize just how terrific she was. And until later, and when she started getting calls to go on all these autograph shows. But I was grown, you know, I mean, and they were flying her all over when they were the Western collectible shows, and she was honored with the Silver Boot, you know, I mean, things like that.
Oh, wonderful.
Jane Russell, she was there that night, too, also being honored. And then I started going, wow, you know, she's got a big following. So,
wow.
About it.
But, now,
I'm thrilled to kind of know all of it. I'm thrilled to have her genes, you know.
Yeah. That for sure. Now, you also, as if you didn't have great genes from your mom gave not only you great, passed it on, passed the buck on, shall we say, but your sister, is it Cherry Curry or Sherry Curry?
Oh, it's Cherie, and Cherie and Marie are twins.
Oh, I didn't know.
And Cherie was the lead singer in The Runaways.
Yeah, so, she rose to major rock stardom. She was like the teenage lead vocalist for, it's a now legendary all-female rock band, The Runaways, who included Joan Jett and Lita Ford and Sandy West and Jackie Fox. I was huge. Oh, my God, I loved Sondra Joan Jett. That song, I Love Rock and Roll, you know, I was all on it. But she, you know, she was... She
and,
was
you know, Cherie, her book, that's Marie's book. Cherie's book was called Neon Angel, and the film that was out about 4 or 5 years ago was based on Cherie's book. It was actually our family life, though I and my brother were not in the characters because we wouldn't give them our life rights. They wanted our life rights. And Dakota Fanning played Cherie, and Kristen Stewart played Joan, and Riley Keough, who is Priscilla Presley's granddaughter, played Marie. She played Marie.
Wow, are you kidding? What's the name of this movie?
It's called The Runaways.
The Runaway. Oh my God, I don't know how I missed that.
I don't know how you missed that too, because that was only about 4 or 5 years ago.
I missed that. I would have been all over anything Joan Jett. Wow. That's going to go on I'm going to search that on Netflix. Wow. The Runaways.
After you said that, then you have to get a hold of me, because I'll be curious. I can tell you stories about that, but I won't tell you until after you see it.
Oh, my Lord. Well, you know, one of my questions was, were you involved at all on your sister's musical journey? The family, were you involved? What are some of your
favorite
memories?
Yes, I was in a way, because my mother remarried during that time, and she moved to Jakarta, and so I was here and having to kind of oversee some of the contractual meetings and whatnot. However, Cherie really wanted to she didn't want me to blow it for her, which of course I wouldn't, but I was extra protective of her. But then when she started really acting also, then I did help her out. I mean, I really helped her with the audition. She had to go back 3 times when she got Foxes, which was Adrian Lyne and David Putnam's first film here. And that was also with Jodie Foster. And that was a pretty powerful film. And she did a wonderful job. She turned 18 on that film.
Wow.
So, and then she did a few films after that. But Marie, excuse me. Marie is an artist and also an author. And she's the one that wrote The Narrow Road of Light, which is one that we're trying to get moving forward again.
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk about that for sure. Now, I want to know what are Alan J. Levy, your husband. Now, I am so curious because I've heard all kinds of stories. A director who you met in an audition. I want to know give us the scoop. How did that happen? That is just amazing. I'm fascinated with that. How did it happen?
Well, I just had an audition for a film called
Beauty. You didn't know him, right? You didn't know him before.
Oh, at that time, I did not know him.
Okay.
And I was married to my ex-husband. And he was the director on the film and kept bringing me back over. It was in the middle of a writer's strike, and he kept bringing me back over and over again. And it was narrowed down to 3 of us. Wildly enough, one of them is one of my very closest friends now, Lonnie Anderson. And all of a sudden, the strike was settled, so the film fell through. And so I didn't see him again for about another 4 or 5 years. Oh, my God, Priscilla, I could not even get an audition with this man.
So, what?
I mean, I was going, excuse me. And he was doing, at that time, he was working all the time, and he directed Scruples, which was the miniseries. He did several big miniseries then. And there were lots of women on Scruples. I couldn't get in on it. So finally, there was another strike in the early 80s, and my agents called me, and they said, there's an industrial being done over at Universal, and I think you know this director. And I was being that kind of stuck-up person going, I don't do industrials. You know, what do you mean?
Right.
So, but there was nothing else going on.
Yeah.
And it sounded fun. It was a Western. So I went over and I read for it. And again, I didn't get the role. But he called my agents and he said something like, you know, she's an old friend. And so I'd like to explain it to her in person. And I went, I mean, I'd like to call her and talk to her about it in person. And I thought, this guy is so presumptuous, you know. I'm gonna call him. So he sent me to call him like 15 minutes or something. I think I waited 45. And, then I called him and I said, very flippantly, you know, don't worry about it. You know, we'll just have lunch sometime. He said, I didn't get it because the guy they cast was too tall and I'm small.
Yeah.
And so I said, oh, don't worry about it. You know, we'll have lunch sometime. And sure enough, when that finished, he called me up to have lunch. And that's what happened. We had lunch and we really became good friends after that. We had similar interests. In science of mind, actually, at that point, I was just studying religious science and science of mind. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of went on from there. We were really became very good friends and worked together. We did Simon and Simon together first. And my ex-husband and I had split up. We were in the process of splitting up. And then after that, then we got together. And that's 30 years ago.
40 years ago! Oh, you know, wow, that is very hard to keep a marriage 40 years in this business. So you two
Actually 30 years. We just had our 20, we got married in 89, but we lived together for 6 years before that. So
wow, that's amazing, Sandra. You know how to hold a man, girl. You know how to hold a man.
Well, you know, we're both lucky there because we've worked together, oh my gosh, so many times since then. You know, 14
yeah, you just completed the sci-fi pilot Supernova at 45, which your husband directed.
That's
what
right.
Okay, first of all, there's so many questions. Let me think. Okay, so what are some of the differences being directed by your husband, and I'm going to say your non-husband directors? What are some differences, you know?
Well, you know what? There's actually a big difference in a way because he doesn't let me get away with anything. You know, I mean, if he knows me so well, he knows I'm lazy or something like that and not really going where I need to go. And also, the other thing which I love is that he's always careful to photograph light. So
he gives you that William Shatner Star Trek track lighting.
in a way. But when I got used to working with him, we worked so often together, and then for years we didn't work together, and it was a rude awakening that I wasn't everybody's prime.
You weren't the Scarlett O'Hara of the bunch.
I was spoiled, you know. So I love working with him. He really, and now we know. We have the same kind of language in a lot of ways. So, and he's at the Actors Studio also. He's in the director's unit there at the Actors Studio.
Oh,
so that's fun to have
Eileen
him on.
With Eileen Gruba too, right? You guys are
Eileen's there and Carmen's there. There's a lot of wonderful
people. Oh, yeah, Carmen. Oh, we had Carmen Argenziano on the show too with Eileen.
Oh, yeah, he's so
sexy. Oh, my God, he's so – oh, I don't know if he's married, but he's so sexy. This man, he's got that – you know, I'm not just talking physically sexy. He's got that suave kind of, you know, I'm going to stand against the wall with a straw in my mouth and
Yeah, he definitely has an aura about him. He does.
He does.
I've worked with him a few times, and I love working with him, too. And he's, he definitely has that innately.
It was so weird because my husband is now obsessed with Stargate. So he's been watching them, and he's like, oh, I can't believe that we had him in this, because my husband's not in the entertainment business. He said, I can't believe we had him on the show, and he seems so down to earth, and so he's just a really cool guy. Now let's talk about the sci-fi pilot Supernova 45. What's it about?
Well, this is kind of an interesting one, and it's kind of morphing a little bit as we speak, because it's about a young kid almost who has supernatural powers, and there's a space alien blob kind of thing that can, it's almost like the Blob. If you remember the Blob,
it
can assume different identities. And there's a renegade captain, and so I'm a general of one particular planet, and he's the captain of another planet, and I engage him into trying to find this kid with this secret, we're calling it a trope, so, but it's kind of like a blob thing, but it's pretty interesting, you know,
it's really good,
and it's it gets a little diabolical, and actually they got Lonnie Anderson playing the mother of the young girl who's blue, and Lou Ferrigno also is attached to it, but he hasn't shot anything yet. So that's kind of fun. So it's kind
I met Lou Ferrigno at WonderCon last year.
And oh, great.
Yeah, he was there at the booth, you know, doing the pictures thing.
Yeah, he's so fabulous.
Yeah, it turns out we have a mutual friend in common, and I actually asked him to be on my radio show, which he said he would, and to get in contact with him, and I swear I have yet to do that. You just reminded me. I'm going to put that on my to-do list.
Because he's a really good guy, and I'll tell you an easy way of kind of saying what our show's about. It's kind of a television version of... oh, boy, this went right out of my head. Bradley, you were talking about Bradley. The movie that was out last year where Bradley played the little darling little, wasn't it a monkey? Galaxy of Terror.
Oh.
A little like that. So we have those aliens.
What now? Let me ask. So this is a feature film. Are you going to target the Sci-Fi Channel?
This is TV. This is a television.
Yeah, sci-fi.
Sci-fi.
Yeah. So you're going to target the Sci-Fi Channel as your number one place to get it aired?
Yes. Yes. Okay. There's a couple of really good producers on board. One that Alan had worked with at Universal years ago. So you know, it's a process, though, as you know.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I don't know, you know, without getting your personal business, this is more geared towards you giving advice to people, young filmmakers. I don't know how you guys funded it, but what are your feelings, you and Alan together, your feelings about the best way to get a film funded? Now, you know, they've got all this new internet film funding campaigns, you know, like Kickstarter, Indiegogo. I don't know if you went that route. I doubt it. But how do you feel about that? And what are some other ways you can go about getting it funded, your pilots?
It's tricky, although it can be done. And now the avenues of getting something produced are so much varied, and you can do something for $5 million or you can do something for $500 million. You know, you really can get them done if you're passionate enough about that. And there are still a lot of people out there. I did an independent, they shot it in Texas, and it was Texas money, a bunch of attorneys who got together. And it's kind of one person knows another person, you know. And another friend of ours, who's Alan, he's working with on another project, he gets a lot of his money out of Texas. And there are just a whole lot of ways. It's not something so much anymore that you're going to just go, I'm going to make this film and make $1 zillion, because that still doesn't usually work. It's not easy to market a low-budget independent. But, you know, the festival circuit is one way to get it out there, too.
Now, I know that you and Alan are on the board of the California Independent Film Festival, and you've been jury members for the past 9 years. So for those, by the way, I'm a screener for the Burbank Film Festival, not the same thing, but I'm very familiar with, you know, what goes on. What, for those people who don't know, what is the board of the California Independent Film Festival?
Well, it's a group of 11 people who have believed in this festival since the beginning of it. It's like any board, quite honestly, you know, and we actually do, we're the jury as well. So generally they get so many submissions.
Oh
my
gosh.
Subcategory. And by the time they narrow them down for us, they usually send us about five, anywhere from five to eight in each category.
So that would be me. I'm a screener for the Burbank Film Festival, and I tell you, I'm obsessed with it. I love it so much. You know, I was told you don't have to watch, which I want to get your opinion on. I was told, you know, you don't have to watch the whole entire thing because, you know, I'm experienced to know, you know, within the first 5 minutes, just like when a casting director watches an actor's demo reel, you know, within the first 5 minutes, whether or not it's going to go through. So, but I do want to say and ask your opinion, because I know that I can't do that. I have to watch every single film that I screen all the way through. I just personally have that work ethic. I do not believe that, you know, people who take time to submit these things, I don't feel that I'm doing them justice by not watching every single one. That's just my thing. I don't, you know, I don't condemn anyone who doesn't. I don't feel that it's fair. I don't think it's morally ethical. So I watch them. Even if they're bad, I'll just watch the shit. I'm like, I'll watch it. Right. Now, so many fabulous film screenwriters, producers, directors, actors submit for these film festivals, Sandra. And I am so sad that there are never enough spots for them. And sometimes their wonderful projects just slip through the cracks. And I really wish there were a way for every one of the really great ones that are submitted to be seen. But I find that there is a lot of nepotism. I feel that I have gone into people, now not my personal experience, not with the Burbank Film Festival, but I've heard from my producer friends, my director friends, people who have the inside scoop, that people who run the film festivals, that they give the spots first to their friends and family members. Is this true? And if so, how can we give any tips for people who are not related to the people who are running the festivals to increase their chances of being selected?
Well, number one, I think that unfortunately, or fortunately, because I've gotten jobs through some nepotism too.
Okay.
Nepotism has always existed in this business, and probably in a lot of other businesses too.
Oh, yeah.
As far as the film circuit goes, though, maybe there's some maneuvering around. I do know that sometimes I've heard people say, okay, I'll give you this one if you will give me that one. And there's a trade in some of it, or someone can really hustle to say, this is a friend of mine, I think he's fabulous, et cetera, et cetera. But when push comes to shove, if it's really an important festival, I don't think that the bottom line is going to allow that to really happen. I know even with ours, we've really hustled a couple of them and went, really, really? That didn't go, that's going to win over this, you know, that kind of a thing. And then there's been some maneuvering around again. And, you know, you really have to kind of stay on top of it and surround yourself with people that you trust. The other festival, the sister festival to the California Indie Fest, is Sapporo. So Alan and I were flown to Japan, and we judged the very first one. They're in their 10th year now, and that was really quite thrilling and a whole other deal because it was all, of course, shorts again, but I was the only woman on the panel, and there were eight other judges, one from France, one from Argentina, one from, of course, the Japanese. They had a couple of Japanese judges, and that was really one where we fought it out. I mean, we kind of duked it out until the middle of the night trying to come up with a winner.
Right.
So it was pretty straightforward. I guess that's what I'm saying.
It's kind of tough because I know that I have personally screened some fabulous, especially foreign films. Just, I mean, the CGI. Some of these films that I've screened look like they could be put right on the silver screen right now, right in any AMC theater. And unfortunately, sometimes they don't make it through. Sometimes they do. So I just wonder what happens to the people who slip through the cracks because there are certain rules for those of you who don't know, there are certain rules as to how many times you can submit it to the film festival. I think different, am I right, Sandra, do different film festivals have different rules?
I don't know about that, because I have seen films
different rules.
The California Indie Fest, and I'm thinking, Chimney at Christmas, this was done like 2 or 3 years ago. I remember it being on the back burners of something, and it'll finally make its way forward, and it'll screen. Okay. So I don't think there's an actual...
Okay. Because I know one film festival, they wouldn't accept a film because it had been made like 3 years ago. It had already been on Vimeo and YouTube, and it had already been screened so many places, so they wouldn't take it. And then another festival said, you know what, I don't care, I'm going to take it. And it was a huge success at the film festival. So I don't know if the rules are consistent across the board. So I guess my advice, and you let me know if that's okay to say, but I would say to just keep submitting it over and over to the same ones, if you can afford it, because God knows how expensive it is to submit it. Well, very important, now that I'm talking about that, and Sandra will probably agree, please, please, when you're doing a film, allow for there to be a marketing budget in post-production and a distribution budget. People don't realize this, you know, because I own my own production company. I produce short films. Lord knows I cannot do a feature. I cannot commit the time. I would go crazy. But with short films, a lot of people don't factor in, say you go to a film festival and say somebody wants to pick it up and be distributed. You have got to have money for that to be distributed. A lot of people don't factor that into their budget. So please look into that, because the distribution company will require funds for that. So not to go into details with that, but you know what I'm saying, Sandra? Any advice on that?
Oh, you're right. As a matter of fact, Priscilla, often you'll see someone, they'll do their whole ad campaign before they even shoot.
Yes.
They do the one sheet, they do the, they try to get as many, the artwork, something that's really provocative.
Yeah, they're worried about the posters, and it hasn't even been in pre-production yet, right?
Absolutely. And so then they'll go to the AFM or one of those film markets, and they try to hustle it based on that and hopefully get the distribution set and raise some money that way. So, yeah, I mean, that's really important. What you're saying is absolutely valid and very, very important.
Yeah, they try to take the shortcut. They're like, well, why not? If they see this, they're going to be all excited. Da-da-da. No, no. I don't know. People have done it that way and been successful, but I can't do it that way, because I have a ABC 1-2-3 type personality. I won't even worry about a film until I have the complete funding. I can't do that. A lot of filmmakers start filming and they're in pre-production. They may make it to production and then they run out of money and then they start running a film campaign. I don't know how you do it. I'd be a nervous wreck. I couldn't do it.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I have to tell you, when I first started out, there was one film I was doing, and this guy, the man who directed it and wrote it, they were bonding the film through Screen Actors Guild every single night. Before we would show up the next day to go to work, we had to be sure the money was in the bank for the day. Day by day by day, he was doing that. And finally, he ran out of money. None of us knew it, and we were up in Auburn, California, shooting, and we woke up the next morning. We were at this little fly-by-night motel. And the next morning we woke up and we were going, well, where is he? Where is he? Well, he had run off in the film fans in the trunk of his car, because he had no more money to do it at that point. And he kept, better trust me, I'm going to make this film. And it was funny, but not funny. Together. 3 months later, he pulled everybody together again.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
It's funny, but you know, it's not funny, but in retrospect, it's a funny story. But that happens all the time. And another thing, Sandra, I'd love you to chime in on this. What I am seeing now, and I bet you this, I don't know if this happened, you know, back in the day, but I find that, and it is a big pet peeve of mine, actors who are not, say, being called in for auditions, or they're not booking work as much as they want, they have come up with the idea, well, I'm going to go on to Indiegogo or Kickstarter. I'm going to write my own short film or my own film, and I'm going to go into Kickstarter. I'm going to raise the funds. They raise the funds if they're lucky. Then they shoot the project. Then they use it as their own personal demo reel. Sometimes they don't even submit it to one festival, or they'll submit it to a couple, and if it's not picked, then oh well, and they move on to another project. Not even caring about all the people that worked on that for free, the cast and the crew who worked on it for free. No, but they got their footage for their demo reel. That is a big thing happening, Sandra. Have you heard about that?
No, I haven't heard about that.
Actors are using Kickstarter and Indiegogo and these film campaigning websites to get the money. They make the film, and then they may or may not even do anything with it. They just drop it because they've already got the footage for their demo reel, and then they move on to another project. And it's huge now. Oh my gosh. So before, and I'm a big donator. I donate to a lot of films, right? So, but what I do is make sure people, before you think of donating, first of all, you're not going to get your money back. Secondly, before you donate, you got to research these people that are actually running these campaigns on Indiegogo and Kickstarter. Go to imdb.com and look up their credits. Look them up and do research and see if they have a good track record. Because I'm telling you, a lot of them out here are just doing it to get their demo reel. I work a lot as a producer for a woman named Linda Palmer. And this woman is, she's wonderful. This woman will beat the hell out of her film. She submits it to every film festival. She hired a publicity company. I mean, she really, really works so hard to get every single one of her films out there. And we were just, we just did a short called Our Father with Michael Gross. Remember him from Family Ties? Michael Gross. We've won 22, if not more by now, 22 best film. We were even, now I don't know what the exact name of it is, but we were actually nominated for the shorts on the Oscar list last year.
Oh,
so
wow.
I don't know how she did that, but the point is that this woman really works. So make sure that before you donate, that you check these people out, or else you're just going to give your hard-earned money to somebody that you're basically paying for their demo reel. So there you go. Now let's talk.
What I heard about recently, though, are all of these workshops that people are, the business is so very, very different than it was when I started out, and it's very impersonal now with the internet. Yeah. And I mean, agents will get 3,000 submissions for one role, and so people are scurrying around trying to figure out how to be noticed. So they've started these workshops, these so-called workshops, to meet casting people, and they're really rampant in Los Angeles now. And I just read a whole long story that Billy DeMota, who also is a casting person, had in The Hollywood Reporter this week on how prevalent that is. And it seems to be common, and nobody is doing anything about it. People are just trying to get in any way they can. It's no longer like it was when I started out, where my manager and my agent could take me in to meet a producer. They don't have time for that anymore.
Nope.
People are trying to really come up with something unique to get noticed.
Oh, yeah. And it's a plus and it's a minus. I'm torn on that. I really am. Because on the one hand, if you're an actor, I'm not talking about bad actors I'm talking if you're a great actor and you just haven't been discovered yet. Because there are a lot of people who are great actors and they just haven't been discovered. Like with writers, anyone, right? So I say, if you, they're these workshops, they should have an audition process. They really should. They'll take the money of just about anyone. Not every workshop, but a lot of them are really scammy. But I think that if you're a really great actor and you haven't been noticed yet, and you say, oh, well, if you're a great actor, you would be, but it's not always the case. I go to plays all the time and I see phenomenal actors that have just not been discovered yet. So I always tell people, go to as many workshops as possible, because if you're a great actor and it's a really great casting director, you're going to be noticed. And it is an avenue that has worked for many people. So if you can afford it, allot the money in your toolbox to be able to go to these casting workshops. But
that's
make sure,
one thing,
again,
you
check out.
Just have to be sure who you're going
yeah,
to.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Check out and make sure that you see the list of people and look at their credit credits on IMDb and make sure they're totally legit. Because a lot of them, you know, they're doing these projects that are, you know, maybe not. They have something out here, which I don't really like to refer to, but they have what's called A, B, and C list people.
Oh, yes. And you know, been around forever, though.
Oh, I know, but I feel so weird. I mean, calling one person an A-list actor and another one a B and C. It's like, you know, but that's just the way. Right, Sandra? It's been around for a long time. So make sure that these are current working casting directors that have projects on. So there you go. So let's talk real quick because we got 5 minutes. I can't believe it. Sandra, we need to take 5 hours to talk. It's good. It's a 50-minute show. I want to talk Robert Hayes. Yeah. Brother-in-law, Airplane Starman, all I have to say is, what? Oh, my God. Such a those films are huge, and they still remain cult favorites. Airplane was hysterical, had heavy comedy stars. How did this impact your family life? It must have been thrilling for everyone. Tell us about that.
Well, he is. He's a great guy, too. He's really fabulous and very giving. He's a great dad. My sister and he have a son named Jake Hayes, and Jake has his own band. He's really a very spiritual kid. I think he's an old soul. He's just wonderful. He just turned 20, I think he's 23 or 4 now, and redhead, blue eyes, gorgeous. He looks like Robert Redford did as a kid, young guy. So, yeah, and Bob is, he's a great father. He's just an overall terrific human being. And my other brother-in-law, who's my sister Marie's father of her children, is Steve Lukather. And Steve was the lead singer and guitarist for a group called Toto.
Yeah!
And,
mm-hmm.
Rosanna and Hold the Line. And now he's part of Ringo and his all-star band.
Oh, fantastic. So, wow. You are just surrounded.
Africa?
Yeah. Oh, I know. That was one of my favorite songs. I can't even believe your life. You have like such a fabulous life. You are, people want to be you. People probably obviously want to look like you because you are a beautiful, beautiful woman. I mean, I was looking at your picture. I'm like, wow, this woman is, it's just a classic beauty. You're such, you have like these graceful Renaissance looks. I mean, you're right up there with Carol Lombard and Mae West.
Thank you.
Beautiful woman. Real quick, Hangover, you were in your most recent role, I guess, film. I don't know if this is updated, but you were in Hangover. So, you know, God, I love, who doesn't love Bradley Cooper? So I want to know, what was it like playing opposite Bradley Cooper?
you got to hold on to your seatbelt there because he's actually a fabulous, fabulous, fabulous guy, a very conscientious actor. He's also part of the Actors Studio. Bradley came through PACE. So he graduated through PACE and then is a member of the Actors Studio. And he works very diligently. And he's just an overall good guy. Everybody on all of the Hangovers is great, including the director, Todd Phillips. It really was a family. I wish they would do 4, you know. But Bradley is, from the beginning, he's just been great and he's never changed. I've seen him at a couple of different screenings of films and, you know, he remembers everybody and he's just a kind person.
He seems
so,
like
I don't think you'll ever hear anything bad about him.
I loved him. I just got to watch American Sniper. Fantastic. We love Bradley Cooper. Okay, real quick, because we only got 2 minutes. I want to get in. You were on Tyler Perry. Oh, my God. I love Tyler Perry. He's a comic genius. I'm obsessed with all the Madea movies. What was it like with Tyler Perry?
One thing I want to mention, though, is that Cher, the charity I'm part of, the big Boomtown show is coming up on May 21st.
Okay.
So I just wanted to slide that in there.
Let's talk about that. The Cher is, it stands for Sharing Happily and Reaping Endlessly. It's a, which is a women in entertainment charity, right? And what I love is that they raise funds, as we were talking about Eileen Gruba earlier, they raise funds for developmentally disabled, abused, neglected children, children with AIDS, support with medical research, and just all forms of developmental disability. So again, I want to put it out there that we need to be more aware and shed light on people with disabilities because they really are an integral part of our society and very talented performers, but that's a whole nother show. My goodness. Now, the fundraiser, it's Boomtown. It's called Boomtown, right?
And the website,
Beverly Hilton. right?
Yeah, and the website is share4children.org. www.shareforchildren.org. And all the information is up there.
Okay. You got some projects coming up. Frame the Method, again, working with Eileen Gruba. All of these we can find out about on your website, sondracurry.com, right? SondraCurrie.com.
You're
right?
A sweetheart. Yes, that's right.
Yes,
that's
and right. I want you, you have to come back on the show so we can promote these, because we actually have to talk about them. We don't even have time to talk about them. We got to talk about them.
So we got to talk, girl. This. We got to talk.
Yeah. And you're doing a project, The Narrow Road of Light, you're developing with your sister Marie. We got to talk about that. So why don't you come back, have Dan book you for August. And
I will do that.
Would you do that? And then we'll talk about your sister's project and then talk about your other stuff. Before we leave, you and I have a mutual friend in common.
Oh, tell me.
Mary Lou Belli.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, I love Mary Lou. She's a great friend.
Oh, love her. I met her actually as I at a, she was doing one of the casting workshops at Signature Studios back in 2003 or 2004.
And oh my gosh.
Yeah, and I met her and we've been friends ever since. I'm actually, she talked me into taking her ongoing sitcom career classes at Scott Sedita's studio. So,
I used to go to privately to her when I was doing half hours a lot, and then she just got too busy as far as she's directing a lot now.
Yeah, she is comedy. I love her teaching style. She is an amazing teacher.
Yes, she is. Get her on the show, Priscilla. She's great.
I did. I've had her on for like, I had her on 3 times.
All right. Well, see, I'm hustling my friend and you're ahead of me.
Yes. Well, I'm sure that I tell her that I know you and that you're coming back on the show. Maybe we can have the two of you on together.
Oh, that would be fun. I love her. God. We've actually done seminars together. And she's actually part of the California Indie Fest, too. We brought her in. We got that connection going, and she's got us connected in other ways.
Well, I'm going to call her and ask her if she wants to come on the show with you in August or September, whenever you're available. Is that all right?
Fun. I would love that. I would love to hear more about you, too.
Sandra, can you believe it's over? It's time to go.
I'm so sad, but thank you so much. No. And thank your engineer, too. Is it Mike?
Mike. It's Mike. He's new. He just started. This is the first time he's ever done a show for me. So he's.
Oh, well, thank you. And have a great rest of the night, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, darling. And say goodbye to your fans.
Oh, goodbye to all of you people who make my life richer. I can't thank you enough. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. We're going to have Sandra back in August, and we'll see you next week on Question Reality. Bye!
Bye! Love you!
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.